You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earl, and here are today's topics. Tottenham rallied twice at the Emirates to battle to a 2-2 draw against Arsenal in the North London derby. Pressure continues to mount from Mauricio Pochettino at Chelsea after a 1-0 loss at home to Aston Villa. Erik ten Hag and Manchester United get back on track with a 1-0 win at Burnley. And Liverpool continue their fine form with a convincing 3-1 victory over West Ham. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. All right, Mr. Earl.
Hello, my friend.
Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, missed you this weekend in the studio.
All good.
I know you had a little break away.
Yeah. Had a few days away and got back for the important stuff, the football at the weekend, so that was good. And we will start, mate, at Arsenal. The North London derby, much anticipated.
Yeah.
Two teams going in pretty good form,
unbeaten,
really.
Yeah, and, both unbeaten.
You know, so yeah, really good form. I mean, I thought it was a fascinating game of football, Rob. We'll get into the details, of course. Mm. Maybe before we get into that, Rob, just the lineups and the big story, wasn't it, with the goalkeeper? I know the show started today with a big look at David Raya coming in. He was selected again. I think Tim felt that was going to happen, and Tim feels that this move to Arsenal is absolutely to replace Aaron Ramsdale as a number one. Now, just, you know, of course, right now, David Raya is only a loan signing with the option, I think, not an obligation, an option to buy at the end of the season. Just give us a quick line, Rob. I mean, is this it, or is this going to be a few games and then they switch over again?
Well, I thought today was telling, Robin, and I've got to admit, last night I was thinking about it, and I thought, I wonder if he goes back to Ramsdale today. Big game, North London derby. He's played in those big games. Yeah. He's never let anybody down. And then we'll see, is it a bit of a balance between the two, or is the one or the other? The moment he's gone for Raya, and Tim's been down this road from the very day that they sign that Raya's going in as number one, it would seem that Tim's right, Rob, and that Aaron Ramsdale, as much as he's supporting from the side and his big personality, looks like he's going to be number two. And for his England ambitions, for the Euros coming up, it's going to be interesting to see if and at what stage he decides he needs to maybe move from the football club, Rob, to play first team football, because he's not going to be happy sitting on the side.
I mean, if we're to believe Mikel Arteta, though, Rob, this is going to be about two players for every position and some
Correct.
Kind of rotation.
Yeah.
I still think there is a possibility in about two or three games to say, you know what, well done, brilliant, did nothing wrong, like Ramsdale didn't.
Yeah.
Now it's Ramsdale's turn to keep sharp and to keep fit. And they might have, you know, three or four games each, you know, nobody in the game thinks that's the right thing to do.
No.
I'm just throwing out the last Ramsdale, Rob.
We know Mikel Arteta makes some decisions that are different. He probably thinks things. He's got a developed mind. I think he's interested in trying things. And in some ways he's saying, like any other player on the pitch, there's competition for places and some will play 1 week and some will play the others. I just think the goalkeeping position, Rob, is so unique. And
so
in that the work that you do, you know, even as an outfield player, I'm putting ourselves in this situation. Like, you need to know which keeper you got for me, week in, week out. Is he somebody who comes for crosses? Is he somebody who stays on his line? Is he somebody who likes left foot, right foot? How does he look like the ball play? There's all those little dynamics and nuances that you get through relationships. I just think swapping and changing, even if it's every three or four games, I'm not quite sure. I think you lose something there, Robin, and I'd be surprised if he does. I'm not saying that Ramsdale won't get certain games and maybe cup competitions and whatever, but it would seem to me at this stage that Raya, you know, has certainly done nothing wrong. A couple of clean sheets, made a couple of saves today. Looks like he's going to be number one.
Yeah, it looked good today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it looked good today, Rob. I thought it looked good. He's so sharp with his feet. Just ready to play out. Made some good saves, as you said. Just Can final just, thing on it for me,
oh,
Rob.
Sorry, go on, yeah, finish.
Go on then.
No, finish your point, mate. And
okay. Just on the goalkeeper situation.
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day about it, and it's like the goalkeeper is like another captain. Well, obviously, you have a captain of the football team.
Yeah.
That's kind of an important player within that team. Yeah. I think being a goalkeeper has as much responsibility as a captain. It's a leader. It's a main leader in a team. And if you keep changing that position, it affects everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, in and around that critical area of the 18-yard box, there's nobody more important than your goalkeeper to direct, to make sure everybody's picked up on all the things that needs to be done. And that's, it's such an important position. And if that's going to keep changing, it's like changing your leader, your captain the time, you know, directs the way that you line up the walls, or, you know, there's so many details that makes it an extraordinary position to keep changing. But again, I just, that's my last thought on, you know, on switching the two goalkeepers.
So my last thought, and it was just, again, a thought that I had in terms of the two goalkeepers. I'm kind of thinking in my head, Rob, What made Mikel Arteta move in this direction, feel he needs to make this move in this direction? Now, competition for places, I get. Was Aaron Ramsdale at fault last season? In a few games, he made mistakes, but I think you can say that about them all. I think he would have learnt from that. So I'm wondering reasons, Rob, and I'm going down a road, and it, again, it's just my thoughts. It might be wrong, I don't know. I'm wondering if the personality of Ramsdale is something with Arteta. You know, he looks like... He's a bubbly character. He was a strong personality. We saw that in the documentary. But he can be a bit emotional. And I'm wondering if when, when I see David Raya today, mate, and he made a really good save from Brennan Johnson in the first half, where he gets his hand to the ball, the thing, there's no drama about David Raya. He makes a save, a great save. He just gets up and gets on with his business. I sometimes think with Ramsdale, a bit like Pickford, there's a bit of, I don't know, showbiz about it. There's a bit of noise. There's a bit of going at... I think this guy's a little bit more tempered. And I'm wondering if Arteta feels in big moments, in big games, when the pressure's on, Raya's personality might be better suited.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe, Rob. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. I mean,
they're
two excellent goalkeepers.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating. And the game was fascinating, Rob, for me. The game was fascinating for me. You know, the tempo was as expected. The atmosphere was expected.
Yeah.
Really, really hot atmosphere. Very high press. Very aggressive press from Arsenal, Rob. And the first thing that comes to mind with this game was that press from Arsenal, that plan to stop Spurs playing.
Yeah.
And the stubbornness and the persistence of Tottenham, Rob, to continue to play out from the goalkeeper, to keep trying and trying and trying and trying. And there was at least two occasions where they make mistakes, they get caught on the ball. Jesus should have scored to make it 2-0. You know, it is with risks. And Postecoglou has said many times, it's going to be scary at times for Spurs fans to watch them do it. But I got to say, I do respect the way that they did it.
Yeah.
It's hard work for Arsenal, Rob, in doing that press. It's hard work. And I felt, certainly towards the last 10-15 minutes of the first half, that the Spurs started to find ways through, and Arsenal got a little tired of that press. And by the way, it's just a big picture on this one theme throughout the game.
Yeah.
Second half, again, I thought that Arsenal didn't want to put that energy in to try and high press all the time. And Spurs, it's almost like they kept going and going and going. It's almost like the manager's like, listen, I've been here before with different teams. And yeah, it's difficult. And yeah, we're going to give up goals and we're going to give up chances. But in my experience, the continued play, pass, that it finds a way through. And when they did get through, even the first half, by the way, they looked dangerous when they got through that press. And again, it wasn't many times. times Arsenal won the territory kind of war, if you like, in terms of where the game was played for the majority. But I thought that was admirable of Spurs, their new team, this new look, this new manager, and saying, I don't care. This is the way to go. And it's almost like, wow, we're kind of seeing it play out. You know, because lots of people say, look at it, Rob. Sorry, mate, I'm going on a little bit.
But lots
of people look at it and say, God, why are they doing this? They're giving up all the chances and it's risky football. Yeah. And, you know, what are they? He's a lucky boy and all this stuff. But there's got to be a method behind the madness. Yeah. And I thought over the course of the game, and of course I thought it was a fair result, actually, a 2-2. You saw that style find its way through that pressing and then more progression into the game. And it became, I thought, an even game in the second half. I just thought that was the big takeaway for me, Rob, is that the style and the manager and the Spurs manager wants to play that way.
It was really interesting you say that, mate, because we haven't obviously spoken since the game was played, first thing. And it's interesting that you know, we do a tactics session on the NBC Sports YouTube channel, the tactics session. Our tactics session was Arsenal's early press that could have won them, you know, and Jesus miss on 32 minutes, which would have put them 2-0 up. And then second half, Spurs starting to continue, had a little bit more press, had energy, and won the game through nicking the ball off Jorginho. So, similar thought, actually. And listening to Postecoglou, I listened to his post-match interview a couple of times this weekend, Rob, because I wanted to make sure I got the detail and the understanding. And a couple of things he said: no restrictions, we go to Spurs. I can't tell my team to play any different going to Spurs and then want them to revert back next week. He said that isn't
going
how
to
it
Arsenal.
Works.
Yeah.
To go, sorry, go to Arsenal. Yeah. He said that isn't how it works. Yeah. We've got to believe in what we do, and we've got to believe in what we do is going to win us games. And as you say, there's going to be a few moments that ain't great. I thought Arsenal were particularly good on the press. Jesus is a master at winning the ball back and hunting it down. I thought he was excellent in that first half. But as you say, Spurs, I thought Arsenal lost a little bit of their drive, a bit of energy, their structure with Declan Rice in the second half. And as you say, Spurs continued to play. They looked, continued to look a threat when they played through that press. And in the end, I agree with you, I thought a draw was a fair result. But I thought it was admirable that in, what were we, six Premier League games and however few months he's been in charge, the Postecoglou can have the belief in his group, and the group can have a belief in themselves to continue to do what they do, and know that, you know what, I think it's born out of, Rob, if that's Mourinho or that's Conte and you make a mistake, he's probably dragging you off, or you're getting hammered, or he's putting you out there. Postecoglou is not that guy.
I absolutely right. And so many things, Rob, just to comment, and we don't want to spend too long on it, but there's so many important things I thought in the game, performances particularly. When I look at Spurs, Rob, and I think half the team, I think as John Champion in commentary said, that half the team are new to this Spurs lineup.
Yeah,
and
young,
you know,
as well.
Some of them hadn't played the North London Derby before. Very young team it is. Yeah. And just a few standouts. First off, Heung-min Son playing as a striker. Brennan Johnson started the game, Rob, and I think I would have said as well that maybe Johnson plays up front.
We thought he might Heung-min be central,
to the left-hand side.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would have said the same thing. Son is now going to be a striker, Rob, isn't he? He's going to be a striker for the club. He's got a couple of goals today. He looks the part. You know, he leads very well. I saw the manager's interviews about the way that he played. He was struggling with an injury. That's probably why he got substituted out of the game.
Okay.
And to be fair, I thought the Spurs weren't... He was struggling going into the game, Rob. I think he had some niggle. That probably explains why he came out, because at the time it was like, why? Why are you taking out the best attacking player? And I thought Spurs actually were never as good with Richarlison in place of him. Other players I thought were excellent... Yves Bissouma, midfield. I mean, I know he's been mentioned before, Rob, but Bissouma, blimmin' heck. I think he's really good on the ball. He's technical and he can play and he's got great vision. He can play around corners and he's clever. He manoeuvres the ball lovely. But he surprised me with his physicality, actually, Rob. For sometimes he tracked back really well. He was strong. He was over-aggressive. I think in the one moment where he got a yellow card, when he rushed up to the goalkeeper, I thought Yves Bissouma was very good. And I'm going to continue on with my appreciation of players in this week's underappreciated performer. It's a Tottenham Hotspur player. And it's kind of early. I'm going kind of early on him. Mickey van der Ven.
Yeah.
Mickey van der Ven. This young, quick central defender they brought into the club. I thought there, you talk about no drama.
Yeah.
He is He is a really composed footballer. We know about his pace. I think he makes really well-timed challenges many of the times. Very comfortable on the ball. He's got great height, great presence. And he's quietly proving to be an excellent acquisition, Rob, because we know how difficult it is to find players to play at this level in that position, playing alongside Romero, who can be a little bit frenetic and temperamental, not temperamental, but over-aggressive and probably not an easy partner to have. So I just think somebody to watch is partly underappreciated, partly everybody watch him a little bit. When you see Spurs, just watch him because it's so easy when you watch a game to focus on the ball and your eye goes with the ball and your eye goes with the attacking players and the movements. Just switch your vision in the game to look at defenders and look at Van de Ven and how he reads play, never gets caught out, and he's got that pace up in what he does. So just somebody, you know, from the weekend, I'm like, and I just think in that sort of environment, in that kind of game, that atmosphere, he had a very, very good game. Was there one? I'm just trying to think of one mistake he made. I think he made one mistake. I can remember him now putting his hands up. Just a bad ball. Yeah, otherwise, he was immaculate.
Yeah, it's a really good shout, mate. I've got him down where I think they're a nice mix, Romero and Van de Ven. It's usually the older player who's a little bit more of the considered and the younger one's a bit hot-headed. It's the other way around here. Van de Ven's got a really nice demeanour, doesn't get too upset about things. Romero's got that little bit of fire that you want if it's controlled. He's quick, Rob. He's left-footed. He's really good on the build-up, comfortable to have the ball and play out the back. And you say that speed of recovery and his size, I think it's a really good shout. Especially when you think of, and you know, I don't want to pile onto it, but Eric Dier, Rob, who we've been saying for years, and you just don't, there's no reliability in Eric Dier. This young man's come in, you know, Dutch international, and looks like he's going to be somebody who you can build a platform on and build some success. So, yeah, it's a really good shout, Van de Ven, from Spurs. For Arsenal, Rob, who did you think? I thought Jesus affected the game with his closing down and his ability. Just, I said to one of the our guys in the studio, if he could finish as well as he closed downs and win the balls, he'd be Erling Haaland type of level, because he's brilliant at winning the ball back. Sometimes just gets a bit rash, doesn't balance himself, doesn't control himself when he finished. But I thought he was a good spark for Arsenal. Saka, I thought, started quite brightly and is involved in, obviously, with both the goals. Odogi was on a yellow card, but I think managed him not bad. I think that came out pretty even between those two. From Arsenal's point of view, I wouldn't say there was many outstanding performances. What do you think of Declan Rice? And there's rumours, Rob, that he's got a bit of a back injury, that's why he came off. Some are talking about whether it might be a strain on the calf as well. He didn't look best pleased, and obviously that's probably because it's a North London derby, he's involved. You know, I'm sure if Arteta can keep him on, he would. But I thought they lacked a little something in midfield. I thought they were easier to play against. I thought a bit of their energy and the drive went when he was off the pitch.
Yeah, it's interesting, Rob, because, you know, Jorginho came into the game and actually played the ball around really nicely. He got caught on the ball, didn't he? Got caught on the goal for Tjomin-Son's second goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, wow, you know, that's a direct hit. So I think that the midfield is still, it's just not finished. You know, I don't know who's going to finish it off. Kai Havertz did come into the game. Fabio Vieira played, didn't have a big impact. I said it before, the Granit Xhaka miss is still a big miss for me. And because of Havertz is struggles a little bit in that position, it's a problem role. I thought they quite badly missed Gabriel Martinelli, Robert's left winger.
Yeah.
He's a star player for them. And when he doesn't play and Trossard's injured as well, then you have an issue on that side. I thought that was a problem. So Arsenal, you know, I still, you know, again, my main, I still haven't seen the fully grooved Arsenal yet.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't a bad performance at all. Great energy, and there was you know, the fans are still, of course, right into it, and they're almost there, but they're still not quite as grooved as we saw them last year. And the midfield position particularly, of course, it doesn't help when you haven't got one of your two amazing wingers playing in Martinelli. So, I mean, Jesus, you had a chance at 2-0. That's the composure, isn't it? There's one thing, like, that you'd want him to be as a complete player, is just to exhale there, take a breath.
Yeah.
maybe take the ball forward. Just think about like an Henry there. Mm. An Henry there probably slows himself down. He maybe fakes, he takes it closer to the goal and side foots it in the corner. It's just a little rash. So, it's not quite flowing for Arsenal as expected it to be.
But isn't it important, Rob? I hear your point, and I totally agree. Mm. Isn't it important that for now, while it's not, they keep, you know, remain unbeaten if they can, continue to win games even if it's not as pretty as they'd like, and hope the football comes? Because I read something interesting last week where somebody said, if you compare Arsenal to last season, they're well short of that level of groove and rhythm, intensity and passing, but maybe they're a bit steelier, maybe they're a bit more experienced, maybe they're finding ways in games that maybe they wouldn't have last season.
Maybe.
So I don't know, but I agree with you. If they continue to keep going and then it clicks into gear, you know, once things settle down, maybe Martinelli comes back. Trossard is a miss and gives them a little bit of a different dimension up there. But I agree with you. It's not quite clicking in the way that you like, but they're still unbeaten and they've still had a good start to the season.
Rob, just finally on this game, I did want to appreciate one more thing about Spurs that I enjoyed today, Rob, is that, you know, and of course we're learning all the time on this version of Spurs. I thought at times they were very, very tough today. We all know about the expansive football and playing out from the back and almost a total football style from the manager. Yeah. But I thought at times when they had to dig in, there was a ton of great crosses, set pieces that came in from Saka, particularly on that right-hand side. I thought it defended really, really strongly and they were tough. In difficult moments, that impressed me. And just on the bigger picture with them, really, after six games, this manager, Rob, it looks like it's such a positive vibe and also an identity. There really is an identity. I feel like if I watch them now, I know exactly what they're going to do. I know exactly how they're going to try and play. I know what things they can go to. I know I know what their movements are from the fullbacks. They continue to do their thing. I just think it's got to be hard to get such an identity with good results, and it's so different to what it was under the previous managers. It's that's pretty special. And there was a quote from a Spurs player, it might have been James Maddison, sort of saying that there's a really good vibe around the place, as if like this is the start of something special with this guy and this team. Again, it's six games in. This is a good result from them. I just wanted to give a final bit of praise for the job that the manager's done in such a short period of time, given how different it is to what some of these players are used to.
Yeah, it's a good point. Actually, James Maddison, after the game, Robert, I think on social media, we got told, had sort of put something out saying, you know, fight, you know, prepare to dig deep, you know, hung in there, got a good share of the points. Not so Spursy, as though like this team are determined that they're not going to fall into that barrier. And on my notes, Rob, I put two things down, a couple of things down today in terms of Spurs. I said it's a football test because you go into Arsenal, can have the ball thing, but it's a personality test as well for Spurs. It's about, can you still be Spurs? Can you still do what you want to do away from home at one of the best teams in the league? And they did. They continued to do that. They got a point, and it's probably a better point for them than it is for Arsenal.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, mate, we should move on. I did want to ask you about the handball of Romero, but I think there's a handball later on that we can talk a little bit about again, this handball. Let's move on to Chelsea. Chelsea, oh my goodness, I think, you know, continues the same theme a little bit. Chelsea struggling at home, nil, Aston Villa 1. Mauricio Pochettino, Rob, I'm starting to make notes of things that his quotes, actually. I'm starting to make notes of his quotes that he's saying, where I'm
this
like...
doesn't sound like a good thing, mostly. It doesn't sound like that's a good thing.
No, it doesn't.
A good draw.
No, it's not. Yeah, because I don't... Please don't start dressing up as anything other than what it is. And I know managers have to speak to try and protect the squad and the team and to keep the enthusiasm and the hope alive at the club, and I get that. But another kind of... Afterwards, I caught an interview where he said, like, we're performing well. Like, it was a good performance. Like, it can't be, can it? I mean, this is another game where they struggle to score. And again, by the way, I can't dissect this game.
No,
this is one of those games in that crazy window.
When
there's, so I didn't see it all. I'm looking at highlights. I'm looking at quotes. I'm looking at extended highlights and goals and stuff like that. So I can't, you know, I can't be too detailed about this. But this is an awful look, Rob, isn't it? Again, this continues where... God blimey, we've talked about the experiment, the amount of young players, unproven in some ways, but talented, and trying to throw them all together in a team. My goodness, this is turning into a nightmare, Rob. That's 5 points, isn't it, in 6 games and another home defeat with no goals.
Yeah, not great at all, mate. And I have to go back to, I think, our conversation beginning of the season or just when the season started, where I said... Mate, it's going to need patience. And in terms of, and I'll say it again, 2 years. It's a two-year thing before this team. And there's going to be some dark days. Hopefully, from Chelsea's point of view, there's some brighter days. There's so many younger players, Rob, who are inexperienced players or players in this group, which I was trying to think about it. When Conor Gallagher's your captain today of Chelsea... And no disrespect at all to him, because I think he's a really good Premier League player, now an international footballer. But when he's captaining the team, it tells me that around them that there's players who, I don't know. It's like when you become a pro, Rob, and you get to, you know, you've been in the game for a few years. You kind of understand some things and know where to be and know when to run and know when to sit in and not give things away. And you have an experience. You have a background. You have a body of work that you can call on to get you out of situations. Yeah. This group haven't got that collectively. And there's individuals within it who are not playing particularly well. So Gusto goes in the challenge. I thought it was a little bit harsh with the red. I think in slow motion it made it look worse. But anyway, it's a challenge. He goes off. Ollie Watkins gets the goal. You know, Nicholas Jackson's struggling for goals. You know, Mudryk's not quite... There's loads of people who are not quite being able to have a body of work to fall back on. And when you do that collectively, it's a problem. Now... I know where I think you'll go. The patience, will be there, but there's got to be progress. And at the moment, I would say there isn't being the progress that you expect from the kind of investment and the kind of quality that's in the squad. Mm.
So, I'd agree with that. And I think that's always important, isn't it? What I will push you on, Rob, is the two-year... It's not a push, really. It's just another question.
Yeah.
When you sort of say it's going to take 2 years, I would... My gut feeling is that in that 2 years, there's got to be new players brought in, Rob. Now, I want to know from you whether you believe if no other players come into this first team squad, that it's going to take 2 years for this team to improve, to get better, to figure out the Premier League, for the manager to find the right system, the right way of playing, for injuries and all that. Do you believe that this group can be where Chelsea want to be in 2 years, or whether that's going to involve more additions in those 2 years?
Well, I think there's going to be a certain amount of traffic in and out. I think that's just natural in any window in any club. I mean, Chelsea are trying to get some players out who they couldn't before the window. They're a bit heavy laden. I still think, for all that they've spent, they're short of a centre forward, Rob, and I think that's a burning issue. Nicholas Jackson, who we saw in the summer series, it's one thing to look dangerous in those games. You've got to convert that into performances and goals in the Premier League. At the moment, he's struggling. It's not the team's not helping him, but he's struggling to find the bat regularly. So I think a proper striker. But I do think there's going to be development amongst the players. So to take your point and to answer your point, I think there's enough in this group with Pochettino given time that we can talk about the body of work, and we can talk about looking at maybe some of the Arsenal players and how they've developed over the last couple of years to get to where they are now. But it's going to take some difficult times. And maybe Pochettino's job at the moment with young players is to go out in the media and not put them away, maybe as a Mourinho might or some other kind of manager. But listen, it's not fun. It's not a fun watch. There was a few murmured boos towards the end of the game. So, you know, fans will give it some time. But, you know, again, they'll want to see better football and more progression.
Of all the clubs, Rob, of all the clubs, the big clubs, to go about this process in this way,
yeah.
I mean, it would have to be, I mean, I suppose they're all, I guess they're all similar, but Chelsea are used to immediate results, victories, trophies, success, if not change.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Trophies, success. And then it goes stale, change. Mm. I mean, it's so different for these fans to sort of have to witness it.
Yeah.
I would not expect, but I wouldn't be surprised if Chelsea fans are like, lose interest. Like, I mean, really? We've got to wait here and wait for this kind of project to happen now? And the excitement totally goes out the club, totally goes out the team. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Chelsea fans are all over this and like, you know what? This is going to be worth it. We'll be patient. But what we've known about this club in the past, it's so different what they're doing to and what the fans are seeing week in, week out. I don't know how they're going to react, Rob. Are they going to? I mean, there's boos today. Does that get worse? Does that continue? I mean, everybody wanted Pochettino and everybody agreed it was the right guy.
Yeah.
Where does it go, Rob? Where does a criticism from the fans end up? Is it going to go back to the ownership and the decisions made by them?
Eventually it'll go to ownership if they're not happy. Eventually it'll go to manager because, you know, as much as I think everybody likes Poch and understands he's a great coach and develops players, you want progress, Rob, and if it's bottom half of the table again for any sustained period, people are not going to be happy, and I can understand that. And I think Pochettino understands that. So he's got to get improvement. He's got to get a little bit more from his players, be a bit, you know, more confident in possession. But I think, Rob, as well, I want to make the point that this wasn't just about Chelsea. Let's give Aston Villa a little bit of credit, because Unai Emery and...
Yeah.
Not too dissimilar terms of being at a football club has changed the complete outlook of a club that was playing in Europe midweek, didn't particularly go as they like. It's probably brought a more experienced type of player. You look at someone like Ollie Watkins, got his first Premier League goal today, scored goals in Europe, etc. But it's almost like you look at Chelsea, they could do with an Ollie Watkins. A centre forward who runs in behind, he's not too complicated, plays with the team, he's good age, you know, is willing to hold the ball up for his teammates. I think there's a nice mix about the way that Villa go about their business. They're well set up, they're organised with the ball and without. You know, where they sit sixth in the table, Aston Villa, mate, you know, and would probably go to Chelsea now and say, yeah, Chelsea didn't play particularly well, but hold on, give us a little bit of credit. And so I think we should do give a bit of credit to teams like Aston Villa and Unai. I mean, the job he's done there.
Yeah, I think absolutely right. I mean, they sneak up that league table. They're getting themselves in a position where they want to be. They want to be kind of challenging from that kind of position.
Yeah.
So it's great for Aston Villa. Unai Emery's had a few bad ones, weren't there? A few bad results.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, opening weekend, wasn't it? We were at St James's Park and saw that kind of... real struggle in the second half, but fair play. There's a structure about it. There's a foundation about the team now under this guy, and they've got back to winning ways. And you know, like Forest before them, that's a great win.
Yeah.
I know that the Chelsea are new and finding their feet, but that's still a great win. Well, one on Aston Villa, good for them, and they're sneaking up the table.
Let's take you to Turf Moor, my friend. Burnley hosting Manchester United. And Manchester United that had come off three straight defeats at competitions. Spotlight on Ten Hag and the football club in terms of people suggesting it's leaky, people suggesting these cliques, people suggesting that the club's not being run properly, whether the manager's got the control and the relationship with the dressing room as he should have. So there was all kinds of questions being asked, Rob. And this on paper looked to be a difficult game, going to newly promoted Burnley, former Manchester City player, Vincent Kompany as their manager, to give it even a little more spice. What do you think of the game? What do you think of United? What was your takeaway in the result and the performance?
Okay, so great result. Really good result. And I think everybody that's around the Premier League and knows, you know, the state of Manchester United right now understood how important it was to get the result. And they've got the result 1-0 through a brilliant volley from Bruno. Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant technique. A lovely ball in from Johnny Evans over the top. And it's just a special talent to be able to do that, to get the goal. So that, I thought Hannibal was excellent. Yeah. I really like him. Like him, Rob. I mean, not only has he got a little bit about him in terms of the attacking side of it, and of course scored was it last weekend?
He scored against Brighton, really, didn't he?
I mean, what an engine. What an engine.
Is he ahead of Garnacho, Rob? Would he be ahead of Garnacho now in that kind of finding the spot?
In a different position, Rob.
Yeah,
I mean, he played as a number 10. He played number 10. Bruno played on the outside. Rashford on the left.
Yeah.
Hannibal's legs. I mean, I just think United need that. I saw him running forward. I saw him chasing back. If you watch him, he's always on the go. He's got an incredible engine. What is he, 20
years of age? I thought you were
going to
say Hannibal Lecter then when you went Hannibal Lecter. I thought you were going down that line.
I can't say his last name. No. I'm not going to chuck in any kind of puns or anything. No, I thought he was excellent.
Yeah.
All that being said, now I understand the injuries and that, and I know that Lissandro Martinez is
Martinez
injured again now. You have
Evans
Yeah, Shaw's out. I mean, there's a lot of changes to the lineup, and that's probably the reason why they look so passive. And, you know, again, it's just hard to see a Burnley team that can dominate possession against Man United. And again, I know the circumstance. I know they're out. I know they got a grind, and I like it. I like United for that.
Yeah.
But longer term, it just seems odd to me. It's an odd look. The Manchester United, you know, for large periods are forced back and they're defending. They're sitting in good shape and all that kind of stuff. But that's not. It's just not the sort of game rhythm pattern you expect from Burnley versus Manchester United. Burnley, a newly promoted team, trying to find a new actual starting 11 because of so many changes. So that's my take, Rob, really. Well done. But, I still kind of expected a little bit more in terms of the football and being dominant with the ball. Yeah. What did you think?
I agree with in many respects. It was about the result. It was about getting the 3 points. It was about the clean sheet for a goalkeeper who's been under pressure, Rob. I thought their structure was better as the game went on. I thought they didn't have too many sort of dramatic moments, partly because of Burnley were a little bit disappointing. I thought when they got to the last third, the build-up play and approach play was decent. Koleosho on the left-hand side is a threat and looks like things can happen when he gets the ball. But, Lyle Foster up top was a bit of a miss. But when I look at Manchester United, Rob, and we spoke to Johnny Evans after, who gave a really great interview, talked about time with Tim and was you know, probably had a goal disallowed for a header, assists on the Bruno finish, was excellent playing next to Lindelof and... Ten Hag's talk about how important he was, but let's just think about, Rob, where we are and what we're talking about. At the start of the season, Manchester United, and my words were, got to get closer to things. Not ready to win a title, but we've got to start seeing them getting closer. And so I don't know, 10 points, 8 points, something like that would be, you know, that's pretty good. And I know we're early on, but when you look at the two teams. And I heard a phrase last week that I thought, I'm going to drop this one on Musty. It was somebody talking about sports and says, a team can either be a metre away or a mile away. Which are they? You can be a metre away from somebody close, or you can be a mile away. Well, if Manchester City are the benchmark, Manchester United are a million miles away. A million miles away from where they want to be. Possession, build up, understanding.
And we didn't expect that, Rob.
No,
we didn't expect
we
it
didn't.
At this point.
But let me quite finish my point. And absolutely, Johnny Evans, who I have a huge respect for, 35 years of age, playing for Manchester United, is a testament to him as a professional, his fitness, the way he conducts himself, etc., etc. But Manchester United needing Johnny Evans, Rob, have got Harry Maguire, who they don't want, can't get rid of, couldn't get him out the door. Anthony Martial, we've talked about, has been at football club 8 years. We still don't know if he's really a centre-forward. Scott McTominay, who's a great lad, will be a star player in another team, but is no longer... Manchester United, if they're going to get closer, the metre away, have to move on. Danny van der Beek, Rob, was on the bench this weekend. I mean, yeah, where does that come from? There's so many players... still in this squad, around this football club, who are not at the level where we think Manchester United should be, therein lie some of the problems.
Rob, I wish I had my list with me. I'm just trying to find my list. You know, the problems, right? And I know that there's all sorts of, you know, the talk about the ownership and all that. And yeah, I get that. And they're the owners. They hire the directors of football. Yeah. The directors, the chiefs,
you know, of the football club.
The biggest problem with this club over the last 5-6 years has been the recruitment. Mm. The recruitment. Mm. There was a stat last week, Rob, that Manchester United have spent the most money assembling the current squad. The most money in the world, Manchester United. So the money has been there to spend on new players. Yeah. And my list was the most expensive players for Manchester United. And you got Maguire, you got Antony, you got Jadon Sancho, you had Di Maria going back 5 to 6 years. Yeah. There's so many that are the expensive marquee signings every season that have done nothing. Yeah. Have done nothing. So that for me, and I know, listen, that there's no, the owners are the owners and it all lies on them. But if they would have had a better director of football to spend this money wisely, you've got a good manager now. Eric Ten Hag knows what he's doing. Yeah. He's trying to instill the discipline. But the fact that when you look back, I looked back a few days ago, Rob, at one of these websites, Transfer Market, that's all the signings. When you look at Manchester United, back to, I think it was 18-19 or around about 2019? Yeah, I'm like, wow, Di Maria, that was a huge fee. And I haven't got my list. My memory's not very good. But it's like there's so many, Rob. It's like, wow, didn't work out, did it? Oh, yeah, well, I think Martial was in that list.
Let me stop you there, mate, because it's a brilliant point you make. How are we in the position that, and I know, is it Michael Edwards who's at Liverpool and Paul Mitchell's at Places and all these people, you know, Newcastle have gone and got Dan Ashworth and, you know, there's probably 10 names in European football who are held as the guys who can set this thing up and get it done. How are we in a position that the biggest club in England, the most successful club in England over recent times, cannot attract that person and set them up to be at their football club? How can that happen? How can Newcastle find Dan Ashworth, who can put a system in place, and this Michael Edwards left Liverpool, and listen,
Liverpool,
and all that. How are we in a position? Whose negligence is that? Is that owners, or is that the next level down of executives? Because that's where the deficiency is.
Mm. Yeah, it's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And listen, it's not really our style, Rob, to you know, point people out particularly, but John Murta is a director of football at the club, and he's a kind of inexperienced. He's a great football man, been around the game a long time. I know Tim Howard knows him from their time together at Everton, and it was a you know, I remember speaking to somebody, Rob, and I said about God, John Murta, and they said, well, you think about it, Michael Edwards was promoted from within at Liverpool, and what an amazing job he did. Yeah. Their feeling was that Man United are doing the same thing. They're one of the guys that's been there a long period of time, been involved in the scouting. You're going to be our director of football. It just hasn't gone well, given the facts and figures and the results of the signings since he's been there, probably before him as well, to be fair. Yeah. It was Ed Woodward. You're into Ed Woodward territory then, Rob, as well. So between Ed Woodward and John Murta, I'd say two guys that are not really qualified to be making the key multi-million dollar signings of a club the size of Manchester United. Yeah. And I think right now you're still getting the fallout from all that money being spent. And they got some issues, I think, with financial fair play. They can't afford to bring in Harry Kane, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And it goes back to that part. But you're right. Who made the decision to put Edward in control of football matters and then John Murta? Well, it's above those, and it comes down to the ownership, and that's where it does always start from the top, Rob. And you know, again, we've gone off a bit of a tangent there. We got into a little bit, but that, you know, I just had a look at that list. I'm like, God, so much money spent on players that haven't done it. There might be reasons for that. They might say, well, the environment, the club, whatever it is. But end of story. And you compare that, and I don't want to get into it right now. But one of my notes on Man City game, Rob, we got them, we could chat them next, I think, or in a couple of matches' time. Their recruitment has been incredibly amazing. Wow. It's been absolutely amazing. They haven't wasted
it. The gold standard,
again,
mate.
I wrote a list.
It's the gold standard.
Of recruitment. Yeah.
Let me just take you back to the game on one point, because I don't want to miss this, and I think it's important. I think I mentioned it on air yesterday. Bruno Fernandes, my friend, who's often criticised, maligned more often from fans who are not Manchester United, but it's seen a bit moany as goes down, it goes whinges at referees, at whatever. I've got to tell you, I thought he was serious yesterday in playing in a position that wasn't natural, maybe on that right-hand side as Hannibal came in. I thought he worked hard for the team. His goal was something special, was the quality that, unfortunately, Vincent Kompany doesn't have in his Burnley team, maybe saw in his Man City team. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant goal. I think leadership comes in different ways, and he's not the archetypal Steve Bruce, Roy Keane, you know, Brian Robson, who you knew as a player and a manager. He's not that sort of manager, but he can do it in different ways. He's a bit more Stevie G. I'm going to play this way. I'm going to have a good attitude, hopefully, you know, in that. And I just thought he deserves a special mention, because he's one of those who gets a lot of stick on your general basis. And I was thinking about this, and I was saying, right now, Rob, if those Manchester United players, I know some potential, Hoyland and Rashford's having a little bit of a time of it, you know, but we know the upside. Yeah. Right now, Bruno Fernandes is the only player who could go to another top six team out of the Manchester United players. I'm telling you.
I know. Which is amazing, by the way. I mean, Marcus Rashford, I mean, you know how I feel about Rashford. Mm. The hot and cold nature of Marcus Rashford over the years is very frustrating to me. And quickly on Bruno Fernandes, you know how I feel about him.
Yeah.
You know, I just think he's a star player. Mm. He's a star player, and I don't care.
That's one good recruitment, flamboyant. By the way. Let's give the recruitment that they got Bruno in.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that is a star. That really is a great signing. Mm. But I don't care if he's a little bit arrogant or he talks back to referees and throws his arms up in the air sometimes. He's a talent. He can play through balls. He works hard. He's kind of aggressive. He plays with some fire in his belly. And he's got brilliant quality.
Yeah.
So the least of Man United's troubles is Bruno Fernandes. So it's good that you pointed him out. But I don't need to do that for me, because I know what he's like. And I know how good he is. And I know I'd love him in any of my teams. I just think he's that good in different positions.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, there's an element out there that still like moans and groans about Bruno Fernandes. There's more problems in the squad than him. But no, it's the right time to bring it out because of his goal. Just beautiful technique, and a player that wants to win, Rob. Yeah. With everything else going on, he wants to win. He's fired up, and I love it.
A little line on Burnley, Rob, okay, just before we move on. Just because there'll be a few Burnley fans, I'm sure, we'll be saying, you know, we haven't give them a mention. I mean, as you say, more possession than Manchester United. I thought their build-up play and the structure was pretty good till they got the last third. I thought they struggled then to turn that into anything. They're not a particularly big team, the team that played, so they don't really want to cross balls in. Everything's got to be worked, and they didn't quite have that quality or the craft to make too many chances. Or Adumi had the chance that hit the post that came out. I think if that goes in, it is a bit different at home, and the fans can get into it. Any worries for Vincent? Only 1 point so far. I mean, champions last year, 101 points, you know, best defensive record, played all the great football, but it's a very different team. It's a very different look now. A lot of lone players gone back, etc. Any worries for Burnley, Rob, with where we are? I think I certainly felt that they would be the one of the promoted teams who might have a best chance of staying up.
Yeah, I did too. And my comment is, don't write him off just yet.
Mm.
Don't write him off. I think they're improving. I think they've had a very difficult schedule to start the season.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult games when you're trying to build a new team and bring in new players. I think Zeki Mduni is actually, maybe special is a little bit too strong a word. I think he's a really good player, Rob.
Mm.
He could have scored that goal.
Yeah.
He could have scored a header. He heads it into the ground.
Exactly.
He's bright. He's lively. He's skillful. Kolo Show, as you said, can play on either flanks. Looks really, really good as well. They're lacking scorers. And Lyle Foster, the South African striker, who's got a couple, I think, already fallen,
two
or three.
Goals,
he was really, really missed. I mean, they're knocking the ball around pretty nice.
Mm.
And I looked at the way that... I had a good look at them, actually, Rob, and they're doing quite a lot of things as well, the modern way with the fullbacks at times, like a little bit like Spurs, Rob. I made a note of it. Both fullbacks come infield and invert into midfield areas.
Mm.
They get the ball to their wide players a lot. They're improving, Burnley, and I know this is a tough one to take. But I just see signs in this team that maybe against some of the weaker sides in the league, they haven't played many of them really, that their style and that kind of football is going to maybe be enough in certain games. Yeah. So again, watch this space a little bit. You know, whether in January, if they can go and try and find a striker to get some goals, that's going to be the thing that lets them down, because their general possession of football, I think, is getting pretty good and certainly pleasing on the eye. And they've got a couple of players with a little bit of talent that's going to get better. Mm. I think I looked at the XG, Rob, on this game, the expected goals, and it was really, really tight. Mm. I mean, they had chances. The chance of Mdouni in the first chance where he hits in the first half where he hits a post. I mean, there wasn't many clear-cut chances in the game, and Burnley had a couple of really good looks. So, they'll take it on the chin, but I think there's signs of optimism for Burnley with this game and of previous others that is starting to find a little bit of rhythm and a bit of flow. Obviously, Company has learned all this stuff at City and Pep, and I guess his experience at Anderlecht as well. But I think there's more to come from this Burnley team.
Let's take you to Anfield. Liverpool, sneaky good start to the season, my friend. 16 points, sitting second behind Manchester City. We just did the lowdown and asked Lady Low, if Man City are not going to win their fourth straight title and defend it again this time around, which is the team most likely to knock them off? And she said, I know it's a bit early and I don't want to go full on, but she said, I've probably got to say Liverpool right now. I'm not sure if whether Jurgen Klopp will want those kind of comments, or he's happy just to stay sneaky under the radar at the moment, keep going. But I think we've talked about this team, Rob. If they can get that defensive structure better, the front line is going to score goals. They can rotate in and out, and these threats them all over. Darwin Nunez scored against Newcastle couple. He got one again today. Is there a sense? It was interesting, the Europa League, Rob, because I watched this game midweek for Liverpool, and it was a bit of a struggle. He rotated, he changed many players, he rested a load. It was a bit of a struggle for a while. He had to get one or two of the big boys on to see it off. Could that be the thing that slightly upsets him? I was pleased that he kind of went, this is Europa League team at the moment. We might have a different look on the Premier League. If he can continue to do that, I think they'll be okay. I'm not sure he can do Thursday nights and Sundays, Rob, and keep that level of performance.
I agree. And I think Liverpool are a club with stature that will prioritise a Premier League. And it is an opportunity to play some of the other players. And I'm sure Jurgen Klopp, given their squad and the club and everything else, will think they should have a good chance of winning the Europa League. Yeah. But, I think they are going to make a run for it in the Premier League. I think it's a really good sign where we're at right now. I looked at the front three, Rob, and Mo Salah, Darwin Nunez and Luis Diaz. Mm. That's for me, that's got to be it. That's got to be the main three. And, of course, we know that Gakpo and Jota came on and scored a goal. Mm. We'll rotate in and around those three. But if those three can find form at the same time and stay fit...
Yeah.
Obviously, we know about the front three of past Liverpool's that were so dominant and so brilliant for them for week after week after week. They kind of need that again. And I think Darwin Nunez, lovely goal, wasn't it? The little ball over from McAllister, chips over the top. He finished it really nicely. Mo Salah with a penalty. Luis Diaz well on the left-hand side. That's the future of the club.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, again, I know Trent's out right now with an injury. Yeah. Joe Gomez playing at right back. It kind of nullifies the issue of conceding goals in that area, Rob, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Joe Gomez is
more
of a natural defender.
Yeah,
he's not going to make those passes, but it's maybe making them more structurally sound defensively.
Yeah.
And they're quietly going on their business. And I see Jurgen Klopp at the end of the game, Rob, watching all the highlights and stuff.
Yeah.
Fired up, punching. As he does at Anfield. And they're looking good. I mean, I guess the only thing, Rob, and I'll throw it back to you on this one, is we're still seeing Alexis McAllister play as a number six, and Endo, the Japanese player that came in.
Yeah. He played midweek, didn't he? I think Endo started midweek, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, I think he started in the
so
Europa,
that's still isn't ideal, and I know that Moises Caicedo would have been so blimmin' perfect for them to get him as a holding player. But, I mean, maybe McAllister, Rob, will do that all season. Do you think he'll do number six all season? And is that going to be okay for them to stay at the top?
It seems to look that way at the moment, Rob. I think you can trust him with the ball. He happy to receive it when he's marked. He's got, you know, good technical ability to get himself out of trouble. It's just probably that you're not getting the best of him. And if you could find somebody who could anchor there...
Yeah.
Is this Gravenberch? Could he be the guy, Rob? I know people think he's a bit more of an eight with legs and he can make things happen.
Yeah.
I just wonder if he could try and convert him, you know, to be a bit more, you know, Rodri-esque, let's say. He can play a little bit, but he's got good size and... physicality to get across the pitch. You know, he's a young player, lots of talent. I'm wondering if maybe Klopp's thinking he can mould him into that type of player.
I would be surprised. Yeah. I would be surprised, Rob. And maybe it's better to keep Gravenberch as a number eight and play him, you know, and continue with McAllister as the... Yeah. And then the three of them could find some rhythm and some balance together. That could be really, really good. And Curtis Jones is...
Yeah,
obviously, you know, still a very good player. Harvey Elliott as well to come in as well. So there's options in there as well. And I don't know. I just think that, you know, again, this is on at the same time, so you can't closely look at the finer details of the game. But, you know, that front three is you know, particularly Darwin Núñez, Rob, that, you know, we're all expecting at some point to really start to score regularly every single week. You know, and maybe Liverpool fans have been frustrated with that in the past, but I still like him. I still like him with making chances, running in behind. He got his goal, and it's a great win for Liverpool, and they're cruising, absolutely cruising.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. Because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Okay, my friend, let's move it to the Etihad. Manchester City, five straight wins, made that six. A 14-minute spell, goals from Foden on 7 minutes and Haaland, 14 minutes. Same old business, really. I mean, the one disappointment for City will be sort of really out of character for Rodri, Rob. 46 minutes on the clock, goes face-to-face with Gibbs-White and then inexcusably puts his hands around the neck. Now, how much contact he made, how much he goes down, and we don't know, but the moment that happens, there's only going to be one outcome. That's a red card. He misses three games. And Pep actually came out, which he doesn't obviously publicly do this too many times, and said how angry he was with Rodri. There was the old when Rodri walked off after he got the red card. Pep sort of did that where he wasn't even looking at him. So disappointed, I think, in the composure for a player who's been brilliant this season and, you know, been such an important part of the team with other players missing injured. But same old City, Rob, get the job done, kill you off with a couple of goals. I thought Forrest gave an off decent account of themselves. They were set up with a back, I think it was back five, didn't they? They went Forest to try and deal with 4-1 almost to try and deal with City's possession and things. But they find a way, Rob. And Matheus Núñez is a player who's, you talk about recruitment, comes in, and I'm going to go back to my old statement, mate, that, you know, I love plug and play. Plug and play, my friend. You bring him into the team, you plug him
play.
In and he plays.
Totally. I know. It's unbelievable, mate. I'll go through. It's just, you know, and it's not as though he's been there. This player's been there at Wolves for any others.
Yeah.
Any
yeah.
other teams
yeah.
that might want to fancy a new midfield player instead of getting the young kids from all over for Chelsea. He was right there.
Yeah.
He showed what he could do. We saw him in the first game of the season at Old Trafford. I thought he looked really good then. Yeah. Let me just run through. So it's Cheeky Bagheeristain, isn't it? The director of football at Manchester City. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I'm going to chuck him in now. Doku. Mateus Núñez, Gvardiol, Kovacic, Haaland, Akanji, Phillips. Okay, Phillips hasn't done brilliant for them. Calvin Phillips.
Yeah.
Jack Grealish done well. Julian Alvarez, a World Cup winner. Ruben Diaz has been brilliant. Ake's been amazing. Of course, Haaland, Riyad Mahrez, Cancelo. Maybe Cancelo hasn't done well. That's a lot of high-priced players that have done really well. Yeah. And it makes all the difference in the world. If you spend a lot of money, not only are you getting the immediate benefit of that spend, but for a decade. And that's what Chelsea have done in the past. The teams have been built before. Mm. It's been on the back of great recruitment. And then there they are. They ain't going to go anywhere, probably. And you have them. And United have them, Adam. And Man City's recruitment. And it did got me thinking with the Matheus Nunes from Wolves.
Yeah.
I'm like, he looks so comfortable on the ball. And, you know, Kovacic looks really good. And maybe it's easier going to Man City. The team's so grooved.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot of expensive players that have been excellent, excellent signings for this team that continue to flourish. And it's a testament to not only Pep, but it's Cheeky, his director of football that he references many times. And the way that they've spent, listen, it has been big money.
Yeah.
And there's still the investigation. Before everybody gets...
We know that from years on. We'll address that when it comes.
And we'll wait for that kind of verdict, if you like.
Yeah.
But the actual players that the money brought in, they have done really well. And it's excellent recruitment. And this was a game, Rob, that I just thought... God, they don't have to look good, Robin, and they're still without De Bruyne, John Stones, Bernardo Silva, Kovacic. You know, not often does City have that many injured players.
Grealish
is back on the bench, and that's an interesting one, Rob. Let me throw it to you. Jeremy Doku, who looks really, really good.
Proper winger.
Does Grealish
come back in
on the left side for him?
Well, Pep called him a proper winger, Rob, which makes me think. Well, right. If I'm Jack, I'm thinking. Oh, so I'm not proper. I'm a winger, but not... I mean, competition for places, also, of course. There's so many competitions, Rob. I don't think he's going to be it. But, yeah, this Doku brings another option with that pace, Rob. Can go inside and outside. You know, he's got blistering pace where Jack's got good ability and football IQ. This guy can just knock it past you and cause you a problem. So, there's going to be good options
Brilliant.
For Pep. Just want to add to what you've said as well, because I think it's important we talk about it. Academy as well, my friend, at Manchester City. Let's not forget Phil Foden, who's a world-class player. Let's not... Rico Lewis, who's just signed a long contract, will come into the team. Cole Palmer, who maybe, for whatever reason, didn't quite make it. You sell him for 50-odd million. I watch a little bit and keep an eye a little bit around Man City. There's players out on loan a number of places, Rob, who are learning the trade.
Yeah.
There's a good academy. There's one or two kids in the academy who are special, who they're developing. So, you know, beyond... The money and all that, there's a right kind of focus on the academy that's coming in, and I think that's a really important part for Man City as well. You know, I think the criticisms of Chelsea back in the past, and it is a bit different now, was that, you know, it was just bought success and everybody was coming. You know, this Man City team also, Pep leaves a little spot for academy players to come in as well.
Yeah, good point. It's a really good point. And you look around the Premier League, Rob, other teams, and some of those, I mean, some of them have gone on loan, some of them have sold.
Yeah.
I look at McAtee for Sheffield United. Yeah. I know it's a terrible day for Sheffield United. We'll chat about him in a second. But, you know, McAtee looks like a player.
Yeah.
You know, Chelsea Palmer going into that club. So it's not, but obviously developed for their own team, but also they've got good money back. And that helps, obviously, the net spend and everything else. Not they should be selling all their academy products, but it's kind of nice when you can develop your own and make good signings as well. So, City throughout the club,
the signings thing, Rob, because it's interesting to me, because you talk about Nunes, and Nunes come in and, as you say, just looks like, you know, I saw him playing in the... He played Champions League, didn't he, midweek, and then he's got his first Premier League start at the weekend. But would I be right in saying if they'd have signed Paquetá, was Paquetá ahead of Nunes? Or were there two different... Because remember the Paquetá thing, then the betting thing came out and the investigation and City moved their focus and went to Wolves. I'm wondering, was it an either-or? And if so, would Paquetá have come in? I mean, Paquetá is a footballer, and you think... But he's a different profile to Nunes, isn't he?
A little bit different profile, Rob. Good question. I mean, I think it's either-or, isn't it? I think they are very similar. I feel like Nunes is more... He's got more defensive fire in his belly.
Yeah,
he can.
Yeah.
He's more durable, I feel like. He's kind of rubbery. He gets his foot in there really well. I think he's a little bit more reliable on the ball. I think Paquetá's a little bit more flicky and a little bit more flamboyant. I mean, I like both players. I really, really like. But I think, I just think they are very similar, Rob. Though I like, for what City need, I kind of like Nunes, given that Gundogan's left the club and he's more of a central midfield player, more than a... I feel like Paquetá's a bit more of a 10.
Yeah, like a silver
than Nunes is.
Yeah,
he's a bit more like that playmaking De Bruyne type, where Nunes, I mean, he's got a bit of everything as a central midfield player. He can do everything really well, and Paquetá maybe isn't quite that same on the defensive side of it or the other side of the ball. So, no, it's a good question. But I kind of think, and you're seeing it now, aren't you? And this is where there are little... There's good players in other teams. It's just trying to find them and who might work for your system. And I think it's a really, really good pickup for Man City again.
Yeah, City look in decent shape. 6 straight wins. Question that was posed in the studio by our very own Lady Lowe. You know how she likes to be provocative at certain times. And she said...
Oh, yeah, all the time.
At what point are we talking about a Man City season where they win every game? And is that possible? Or an invincible Man City season? Is that also, would that be kind of on Pep's radar, not only to win it? Could there be an invincible? She said, if we get to 11 or 12 and they've won, you know, double this number now, and we get to 11 or 12 and they've won every game, or certainly are unbeaten, do we have to start thinking, talking about some of that stuff? A bit early yet?
Well, 11 or 12 is early, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
is it something
then that becomes a bit more of a focus? It builds, doesn't it, each time when 11 gets to 12 and 12 gets to 13?
Yeah. No. I tell you right now, it's possible. It's absolutely possible that this team can be invincible. It's just possible. Do I think it'll happen? No, I don't. Mm. But it's absolutely possible. I don't think it starts to get on the thought process until 20-odd games in. Mm. 20.
Yeah, we
20
said,
odd games
yeah,
in.
20, 20,
20 odd
yeah,
games in.
23, 24 maybe, and then you're thinking...
Yeah. And it is difficult when those old Champions League games kick it, which they are now. It's that time of the season now where they're kicking in. It is going to be difficult. But if you told me at the end of the season they went without losing a game, it's absolutely possible. But again, it's such a difficult thing to do. Given the style that they play in, given the rotation that they do, it's not as though they do rotate a lot, Pep, in the league games as well as everything else.
I know the three promoted teams haven't started that well, but there's some good coaches in this league now, and there's some different kind of tests every week. So, it was just one of those kind of a bit flippant throw out early, but, you know, kind of thing that, you know, if we get to Christmas and we're still talking the same thing, my friend, then maybe we'll start having a little bit more of a serious conversation about it. Okay, let's move things on. Let's round up the other games, because obviously we're running a little bit long on this one. We have to start at Bramall Lane, mate. Sheffield United 0, Newcastle 8. Yeah, for all those who didn't quite, not sure of the podcast or haven't seen the results, Newcastle 8, 8 different goal scorers, Sheffield United 0. We believe from our stats, guys, Rob, it's the worst defeat Sheffield United have ever had in their history, which is nearly 5,000 games of football. Where'd you start with that, mate? And Paul Heckingbottom, who, some are suggesting that he's under a little bit of pressure with the ownership group anyway. Chris Wilder's name's been mentioned, and, stability wasn't great before the game. Where are we with that? How bad is that? How quickly can you get over that, Rob, and move on? I think the West Ham away next week, I think, if I'm right. Yeah, away at West Ham next week.
Well, first off, to concede that amount of goals is a really bad reflection of the personality of the squad.
Yeah.
You know, because we've been there, Rob, when you know that you've got two or three, you're
days,
away.
Yeah.
I think it was Arsenal. We got beat 5 or 6. It's like, you know that something bad's kind of happening here.
Yeah.
And to be fair, set pieces, everything, the Dan Burn at the back post, there's so many, everything went in, the shots, everything seemed to go in. And if a team can't kind of come together and stop that, that's a bad sign. All that being said, I do feel for them a little bit, because they're like other teams that get promoted. He's trying his best to build a new team, find a new rhythm, find a new system. I don't think he needs to pressure Chris Wilder, who's done really nothing since leaving the football club. Did a pretty bad job at my old club, Middlesbrough, yeah, I think, yeah. Chris Wilder, for a period of time. I don't know why, you know, just for sentimental reasons, they might want him back. You know, I kind of like, for the most part, Heckenbottom's interviews and what he's trying to do. He's brought players in. They expanded a little bit today, Rob. It's not as though every other game they've been bashed. I think most other games I look down there, you know, it's kind of narrow defeats. And yeah, they're really, really struggling, but nothing like this. So I'm not going to jump on Sheffield United for this. This is not saying it's a one-off. I said at the start, it's a very bad look for the personality, the character of the squad, that this can happen.
Yeah.
But they're finding their way. And you know, it's still too early to write off any teams, in my opinion, just yet. And, you know, it's some moments where they're attacking now with McAtee playing. Hamer is a good footballer as well. You know, Cameron Archer, it looked good. So there's something there. But this was just maybe a little bit less defensive, Rob, than they've been in. They played Spurs, I think it is. They played City, haven't they? Where they were very defensively set up. They weren't so much in this game. And Newcastle were like, wow, this is kind of nice. We've got tons of space throughout midfield. It was bad. The shape and structure of the team was what was most shocking, that it can be so easy for Newcastle to get into dangerous areas. And when they got in those areas, I mean, Trippier's cross for Callum Wilson. They were really spot on
great
with their attacking play, obviously.
Yeah. I think the worry would be, Rob, it's 3-0 at half-time. You make changes, you try and, I don't know, get back in the game. You concede eight overall. It's not good looking. Listen, certainly not our job, and I don't like being talking about, you know, people losing their jobs and that, but we know the Sheffield United owner is an ambitious man. He wants to stay in the Premier League. Again, the whispers around Chris Wilder, I don't know where and how they've started, but they're definitely circulating. And like you, I'd like to see him being given the chance to, I always think, coach your way out of this. Show us you're a better coach than what you've seen. And let's remember, was it Bournemouth lost 9-0 to Liverpool and stayed up to Gary O'Neill? So, you know, you can have one bad day and it's doable. Yeah. It's doable, but, you know, you can't have too many bad ones like that. I think it starts to go against you. So, not a great day for the Blades, but a great sort of game for Newcastle. I just saw great opponents for Newcastle. Having had the Champions League and the emotions of the San Siro and the nil draw and the AC Milans, you know, I thought this could be a difficult one, actually, if Sheffield United could get amongst them a bit, but wasn't the case. And pretty easy win for Newcastle. Brighton, my friend, Brighton 3, Bournemouth 1. Brighton got back to winning ways. Went down to a Solanke 1-0, but Kirkez and Mitoma came on as a sub. I think it was 16 seconds he was on in the second half, scored his first goal in his second. He's a special little talent, isn't he? I know he was rested today because there was a few changes for De Zerbi, but he's some player, this Mitoma, by the way. Another one for Brighton. You talk about recruitment.
Yeah, and he's a scorer, Rob. You know, I think there's a lot of talented wide players that play in the league and in different leagues, actually. But the difference is now that wide players in modern-day football need to score. And Mitoma has got the ability, and many do have the ability to do great things. But the goals is what sets these forwards apart. And I think big clubs, you know, look at wide players. If they can chip in with a good number of goals per season into double figures and more, he's doing it. And we know what he's like as a winger. I'm sure he's... he's a pretty complete wide player for me. And it's going to be... I mean, Brighton are a fun watch. He's going to rotate a lot. I think we've seen that already. That it's one of those team sheets, Rob, when you get it, you don't know who's going to be on it. He rotates the front players between Welbeck and Ferguson and wide players and central. He does a lot of rotation. So it's a good squad and it's a good story. You know, there are going to be weeks where they get a bit battered. They had a bad, you know, European... encounter, didn't they, during the week? But this is a great way to bounce back.
Let's take you to the G-Tech, my friend. Brentford 1, Everton 3. I think last week we both spoke about Everton, and certainly I said that there's a better team in there than what we've seen.
Yeah.
They get the first win of the season, first 3 points. When Decore, the go-to guy when they need something big, gets them up and running. Jensen equalises for Brentford with a decent strike that beats Pickford. And then Tarkowski, I thought, was excellent, headed them into the lead. And then Dominic Calvert-Lewin, mate, off the bench. What an important goal it was for him. Really nicely finished, but coming off the bench, important goal. And it was just a performance that I was... kind of impressed by Everton, and that Brentford's not an easy place to go. Usually a Brentford team that turn up weren't quite at races, weren't their best, but I want to give Everton more credit. Thought the midfield, Onana, Garner and Doucouré is a real threat. Got Garner on the right-hand side, McNeil on the other. Beto is going to be an enabler, I think, more than a great goal scorer. He doesn't look like he's got the cleanest feet, but I think playing off him, playing maybe as a partner, if DCL can get fit. And I'm going to go straight to my underappreciated performer of the week, my friend, who's an Everton player, plays in the blue of Everton. And some might think James Tarkowski, the captain, you know, Dyche knows very well from Burnley, and talked about him after the game. But I'm going to go for his centre-back partner. And it's a guy named Jareth Branthwaite, who people may or may not know. He's 21 years of age. I think we talked about him a couple of weeks ago. I did a bit of research where I think he was born in Carlisle. He was sent at Everton after playing, I think, lower league. He went to PSV on loan, Rob, to go and play some football. And I think they felt like going to another country will mature him as a player and as a man. And I believe that is the case. I'm really happy with the progress he's made. He's quick over the ground. He's left-footed. He's got a good temperament about him. He's improving all the time. And I was reading a little bit something just before we came on the podcast. Like, there's already talk of people like Manchester United having a little look at him, that, you know, he's a profile of the kind of centre-back they would like. I think he'll learn from Tarkowski, who's really improving and has always been a bit of a leader, but will defend for his life with the goal. And a side, Robert, where, do you remember the days when it was like Holgate, either Mina, Cody and Godfrey. They've had centre-backs
Michael
all
King,
over the place.
All of those.
And all
problem
of a sudden,
position.
Yeah, some have gone, some are not informed, some have been injured. Branthwaite's come in and done an outstanding kind of under-the-radar job. As you say sometimes, young player, Rob, who, if you could keep an eye on and if he can maintain a partnership, is going to be as important for Everton as anybody else in that squad.
Absolutely right, and well said, and it's so important. And it's funny, we've both gone for, you know, younger centre-backs time, Rob, and underappreciated, and maybe that's something in that, because centre-backs are a little underappreciated. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks for midfield players and goal scorers and creators. Of course, that's absolutely key, but defenders are so important. And like, as you said there, Rob, it has been a problem position. You add into that Nathan Patterson, the right fullback that I like, young, energetic, can play a little bit. All of a sudden, the back four in front of Jordan Pickford, who's obviously an excellent goalkeeper, then it starts to look different defensively. You know, a little bit like Spurs changed a lot of their defensive individuals. They look different. They look better. Everton will hope through. And I know that Patterson was there last year and maybe there isn't that much change, but centre-back is an important position in the team. And to go alongside Tarkowski, that I think we both know is a pretty tough, rugged, pretty good Premier League central defender, that's important. And then, you know, as you said about just in general, you know, I think we both have a similar feeling that this is going to be... I was in the studio last weekend with Lee Dixon.
Yeah.
And I made the point that, you know what? It's a tough sell now. They lost last week, and I know they lost, and I'm making a tough sell.
1-0 to Arsenal, wasn't it?
You know what? That's it. And I said, I still think Everton are going to be quite a bit better. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of got towards the mid-table point, given who they've signed and how different they look. So apart from that defensive improvement difference we've just talked about there, we know the strikers that can do some damage now. And again, I keep talking about him. Jack Harrison's going to be an excellent signing for Everton.
Getting close, isn't
really,
he?
Really good.
I think he's on the grass at the moment, they said. And he's getting close towards it, yeah.
You've got Danjuma that's had a little look, and he's had some good moments. He was left out of this game, I believe. Beto, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, McNeil, and Doucouré in midfield with Onana. You know, there's got to be enough there not to be in a relegation fight. I mean, Lee Dixon didn't really agree. He said, you know what, I still think it's going to be a very difficult season for them. And it might be. You know, who knows who's going to be right? I just feel like if they're kind of lucky with injuries, this squad, with Dyche's experience, is better. And I don't feel that they will be in and around that bottom three. They're going to be a long way away from it. They're not going to be. But I think this is a better team, well-balanced, particularly if they can stay fit. I think they can have a reasonable season.
Luton played Wolves this weekend at the Kenny. 1-1 draw between two teams who both would have really liked the three points. But the incident, Belgaard got himself sent off for a sort of stamping action on Lockyer. And then Pedro Neto, who's a clever little player, Rob. I think his first Premier League goal to go to four Premier League assists. Gets the goal for 10-man Wolves. And then it was a penalty, wasn't it? João Gomes with the penalty that ball hit his hand. It did deflect off his knee, but apparently now, through the PGMOL, we're told that it makes no difference. So a penalty was given, and Colton Morris put the ball in the back of that to give Luton first points of the season for them and Rob Edwards. So I think Rob Edwards, it feels like the press is off a little bit. It can stop talking about them now and they can get on and do better.
Yeah.
Kind of, I suppose both teams in the end will settle for it, but both would have wanted three, Rob. Both, it's a game where you, I think in both camps you're thinking, we win today, then we're up and flying.
Yeah, that's right. Particularly for Luton at home against Wolves that are struggling, that you know, we're not quite sure which direction they're going to go into, that seemingly have had a few bad decisions go against them.
Yeah.
I saw Gary O'Neill after the game, Rob, was absolutely fuming mad with it, with the handball. And it's kind of understandable in some ways. I do want to go over that in a second. But I think for Luton, I mean, off and running, they've got your point. I mean, Luton at home are going to be an interesting watch. It's not going to be an easy game to go to for any of these teams. And like I said, it's way too early to get too flipping down on some of these sides. We've been doing this Premier League a long time now, Rob. Yeah. And, we've seen so many different scenarios and so many different ways of being great and not being great and starting well and starting poorly. So fair play to Luton Town. You know, they'll take that that penalty. Nicely stuck in by Morris, of course. 65th minute that goal was.
Yeah.
Now, just on terms of decision, Rob, and the handball, and I know that we've talked about it many, many times. Now, it's just an opportunity just to go over, because on social media, you know, people, God, they don't have to go off it on social media, Rob, and they don't really have the facts that they should have. I want to say a couple of things. First off, anybody listening to this podcast, right, who's into the game and wants to kind of get their facts right, if you go to the IFAB website or FIFA's website and just search in there laws of the game, IFAB laws of the game 2023, there's a PDF document and it's right there. You go down to law 12, it's misconduct. You go to the handling part of law 12, and there it is. And it's been simplified. The last couple of years, handball has been simplified. We all know about this situation here where it's down from under your armpit is regarded as being the arm. Other than that, Rob, these are the two things that you have to, on these situations, in handball in general, there's two things to consider. That's all. It's been simplified. First one, does the player deliberately handle the ball?
Yeah.
Does he move his arm to the ball?
The ball,
right?
Yeah.
That's handball.
Yeah.
Right? That's a pretty simple one.
Yeah,
so, you know, because you can still have your arms down and the shot comes in and you're like, oh, you put your arm in the way of it, even though it's close to your body. So that's the first part. And the only other part, second part is, are you making yourself unnaturally
bigger
unnaturally, are you making your body unnaturally bigger for what you're doing? So if you're stretching or you're jumping, there's an expectation that the arms are going to be, you know, in a natural position for that movement.
Yeah.
Anything that's not natural for that movement in a game, you know, then you're into territory of it being handball. That's the two things. Don't think about deflections. If it comes off your own part of your body now, that's out of the laws. It's out. I think it's in the guidance section of it.
So if I
clear the ball and it comes off my, like this case with João Gomes,
he's
trying to clear
to
the ball.
Hand,
it deflects off his body and he's stretching and his arms are really, really high. It's still subjective, that, by the way, because I could still say,
it's,
I think Tim said
it
in the studio, Rob.
Yeah, Tim said it's a natural action for your hand to go up. Yeah.
When you're stretching, so that in that regard, I actually thought it was a little bit harsh, though it seems, Rob, when you see an arm so far away from the body,
it should be given,
they're given so much. But that's the two things that you have to figure out.
What's interesting, Rob, and I don't want to chuck him under the bus, but I believe, and I'm allowed to believe, that Mike Dean was on our Sky in the UK, our partners in the UK, and that he was sitting in the studio and said that it shouldn't have been given because it deflected off Gomez's knee. So that's an extra referee who's just, we checked on that rule and they said that's been negated now by him making himself bigger with the hand being where it was.
That was 2 years ago, Rob.
Yeah, it was 2021. But an ex-referee who's just not long out of the game actually still didn't get the law right then, Rob. So that's where confusion starts to come, because then people say, well, Mike Dean's just said and whatever. But, yeah, sometimes you see it and you think, well, that's more clear. There's other times you think, actually, that's part of the action of moving. You probably know why it's going to be given.
And that's what it is, Rob.
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly what
it's subjective.
Yeah,
that subjective. Second part of it, the second part, Rob, it is subjective to a referee. If a referee thinks, you know what, I think that, what was the one, the Spurs guy, where he came out and he hit his arm, against, was it against Man United or something? Mm. You know, that referee thought that he was... And I tell you, you know, if you watch a game of football, right, in general, if you're watching the game, just have a look at all the players in the box.
Yeah.
And I tell you, for now, there's arms all over the place because it's natural to do that. And then if the ball happens to hit the arm, you're in trouble nowadays. But I don't know whether a lot of these you shouldn't be. You know, again, it's been simplified. It's subjective. Does the player deliberately put his arm in a position where he's going to be there for the ball to strike it? Or whether it's a natural movement of him jumping, reaching, sliding, whatever it is, and your arms do come away from your body. But in terms of deflections, players close to you, off your own body, whatever, it's those two simple ways, you know, and I think that makes it easier. But people don't understand that, and then they see one given that subjectively from a different referee is different. Well, this is different to that. I get that. Being consistency in a subjective decision is hard to be consistent amongst a bunch of referees.
Thank you, Robbie Musto, FIFA executive. Thank you so much for that. Listen, mate, we'll just the only one last result that we haven't talked about, Crystal Palace 0, Fulham 0, point each for those in the London derby. Listen, mate, we're going to wrap it up. I think I've had enough of you for one day. You can see when you've had a weekend off.
Oh, I'm fed up,
tired. Stop talking, but let's wrap things up on a day when North London remains both red and white after 2-2 draw at the Emirates. Liverpool look like they're going to team to chase City at the top of the table, while a belter from Bruno at Burnley dims the spotlight a little bit on Ten Hag and Manchester United. Look out for our next podcast. That's next weekend, when we'll review match week 7 and bring you all the storylines from all the games next Sunday on October the 1st. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Mustard. Together with two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.